everyone. It's time for another expedition into the hidden recesses of our DNA to unlock our inner technologies and how to awaken them with Otherwear. I'm Liz Miller and I'm your host, and I've got an action-packed show this week with an awesome interview all about the healing properties of crystals, minerals and gemstones with a brilliant woman, Sheila Randazzo, the author of Rock Medicine, Earth's Healing Gemstones from A to Z. I've been a devotee of rock medicine and used it on a daily basis for many years now to fix everything from my own, my friends, family and even my cats. Coughs and colds, dental disorders, fatigue, anxiety, sprained muscles, back pain, period pain, even sore vocal cords. So I'm delighted that Sheila will be joining us in just a few minutes. If you've never listened to the program before, one of the aims of this show is to demonstrate that despite what we are told, healing the human body doesn't have to be complicated or expensive, and that we have all these inbuilt abilities, or as I like to call them, technologies, that simply need to be switched on to restore us to a perfect state of health and inner peace. But living stressful lives can throw us out of balance with our true nature and its rhythms. So part of this show is to discover the many tools that we can use to prevent our bodies from creating disease and unhappiness. Some of them are tools the ancients knew and used well, and one of these is crystals. In the year 2000, our society is virtually run on crystal technology, and fortunately there is now much in the way of very solid science in this field, how crystals work and why they heal. Paula Peterson from the Earth Code International Network writes in The Rekindling of the Ancient Art of Rock Medicine and in Restoring Our Faith in These Timeless Natural Sources for Remedies, we will once and for all put an end to long-term suffering and the chronic illnesses that have plagued humankind for centuries. Rock medicine offers an effective holistic approach that is common sense, simple, and a reunion to a natural practice that is primordial at its core. Sheila Randazzo is the author of Rock Medicine and a dynamic messenger of this lost healing art. The interview that soon follows is quite an eye-opener, and I couldn't have said it better. Now, I must say at the outset that if I'm sounding a little bit stuffy in the nose, that's because I am, and I'm currently holding a combination of stones of the seven cleansers, amethyst, shark's tooth to indicate the nose, and fluorite to indicate that there's a little bit too much fluid. I'm hoping, actually it's all dried up now, but I'm still sounding a little bit stuffed up, so I apologize for that. We will continue, and I would also like to say that there are also many different healing modalities that work with crystals in different ways, and rock medicine is different to the shamanic healing with crystals or constructing grids or layouts on the body, but I do hope in future shows to invite other guests on who can teach us about these methods. So please make a note that we are discussing rock medicine with Sheila, which is for me so far the most reliable and trustworthy method I've ever come across to use crystals for healing. Hope that you're comfortable and ready to settle in for what promises to be another fabulous show.
Online.
My next guest on Otherwear is somebody that I've been looking forward to speaking to on the radio for a long, long time. I first heard of Sheila Randazzo when she was on another radio station speaking about rock medicine. And she is the premier teacher and practitioner of rock medicine and founder of it in the world. It is the standardized, specific use of crystals, gems and stones for wholeness and well-being. Sheila is the author of the book Rock Medicine, Earth's Healing Stones from A to Z. After 27 years of sharing rock medicine one-on-one, with new clarity and resolve, this ambassador of balance is bringing rock medicine to the masses. Since asking Creator, as a small child, to use her to bring help to the planet, she has had audible communication with a light being who has guided her and counseled her daily. Overcoming tremendous life obstacles, Sheila has been directed and educated by Creator in the use of the mineral kingdom for wholeness. This system encompasses the full spectrum of application for body, mind, spirit, and environment. So it's with great pleasure that I welcome Sheila Randazzo to the show. Welcome to Otherwhere, and thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Oh, Liz, it's my pleasure. Thank you so very much for being a vehicle of sharing of this information, because that's really all I am also.
Well, it's a real honor, actually, for me to be able to do this broadcast with you, because honestly, Sheila, I just think you are one of the most underrated people on the planet today, that more people should know who you are, and definitely everybody should know about rock medicine. And I'm so pleased that you've agreed to be on the program to help share the news about this incredible tool that we all have, that's freely accessible to everybody. And it's in the earth, and it's in the form of crystals and minerals, or, I mean, they really are the same thing, crystals, minerals, and gemstones, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And so, really, once we understand a little bit more about how these beautiful minerals that are embedded in our earth's crust can help us in all areas of our life, it just makes things so much easier. And so we're going to talk all about that during the show. But one of the best things about rock medicine is that once you get your collection of rocks together, most of them don't cost that much. Then from thereafter, it's free.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be shared freely with others for the price of a gallon of water.
And it seems almost unbelievable, doesn't it? It just seems too good to be true.
Well, you know, I have a saying. A lot of people say, you know, if it seems too good to be true, it probably isn't. But my saying is, if it's too good to be true, it's probably divine.
I love that. That is very, very good. So tell me a little bit about how this all began for you. I know that when you were a little child, some big things started happening to you in the form of the light being that I mentioned in the introduction. What was that experience?
Well, you know, I grew up in mainline Philadelphia, and my father had three doctorates, one in law, one in chemistry, and one in electrophysics. So I was being raised in a very intelligent household. My mother was a fundamentalist Christian. So I was also being raised in a extremely religious household. And I was at a little friend's house one evening, and we were playing ping pong. And this was just a couple weeks after I had watched one of those shows on TV about the starving children, you know, in Ethiopia, and their little bloated bellies, and I myself was such a child, and it just tore me up. I started to cry, and I went upstairs into our bathroom, and I looked into the mirror, and I looked really deeply into my own eyes, and I just said out loud with all my heart, you know, please use me to help this planet, and I really meant it. So I didn't think about it beyond that, and then this week later I'm at this little friend's house, and right like mid-swing as I was playing ping pong, I heard a voice very audibly from outside that actually moved my eardrum as if someone were standing over my right shoulder, and it said very matter-of-factly, your mother wants you home. I put the paddle straight down, and I said, my mother wants me home. Well, I knew that no one in the room had spoken, but for me to say my mother wants me home did not, you know, That was nothing that would have appeared strange to them either.
You weren't giving yourself away.
Yeah, and Maureen's dad said, oh, do you want me to walk you? And I was like, well, I'm five. Excuse me. You know, I only lived a couple blocks away, and of course I was such a big girl. And so I headed out from their house. What I didn't realize at the time was that I was very dyslexic and that I had night blindness. So as it was the blue hour, that real dusk, you know, hour when the sun falls very quickly, it goes, you know, from kind of twilight to a real dark blue and then to black real fast, I just got completely turned around. But I was in one of those 1950s, 1960s neighborhoods where you knew all your neighbors, it was safe, I was not afraid. So I just went up to one of the doors, and I was going to tell them my name, my address, and I needed some help getting home. And so I knocked on the door, and no one answered. And instead of just going to the next door, I think maybe because I was so young, I kind of had the mentality of, well, I tried that, that didn't work, and now I'm out of options. So it was very dark, and I, in an instant, I just panicked. And this doorway was about 3 cement steps up from the sidewalk. And so I turned on the front porch to race down the stairs, and before I even stepped down a step, I kind of bumped chest to chest into someone standing there. And I looked in front of me, and here was every single Sunday school picture I'd ever seen growing up. It was the brown-haired, brown-bearded, white-robed with the blue, you know, shawl over it. It was Jesus standing in front of me. And I was raised so spoon-fed the Bible stories that to me, it was like, well, something goes wrong, Jesus is supposed to show up. That is what is supposed to happen. So I felt kind of this strange sensation of him, like, searching my mind. And I felt this connect, you know, that he was, you know, seeing that I was okay with this. In fact, I thought it was a pretty good idea that of all, you know, possible choices short of my parents, that's who was there.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, Jesus, it's you. You know, can you help me? I need to get home. And as soon as this persona that was displayed to me as Jesus connected that I was recognizing who it was, that I was comfortable with who it was, it was no longer that manifestation, but this really fluid, glittering, liquid light being that just picked me up in its arms, and in an instant, I was on my front porch, in front of my front door, at my house.
What an amazing story.
When I was carried home, as soon as I was in the light being's arms, I had no sense of time, speed, space, surroundings, nothing. And I, from that moment on, this voice, you know, spoke to me. But as I said in the beginning, my mom was real fundamentalist, and I believe, and I know now, that she had some real, you know, mental imbalances that went undiagnosed and untreated. And I think that radical religious groups are a pretty common place for mentally ill people to hide.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And, you know, when I ran into the house, just innocent as, you know, a doe in the headlights, saying, Mom, Mom, guess who brought me home? Well, I got put in, you know, the scary prayer closet with the candle-lit crucifix of Jesus with the carefully painted red blood spatterings, you know, for about 6 hours. And it just, it really taught me a very quick, very somber lesson about don't tell anybody this stuff.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody anyone's talking to you.
Not even your mother.
Exactly. Mm. So I didn't tell anyone. And it was about when I was 16 years old that I even realized that it wasn't happening to everyone else. It amazed me because I had such a constant communication. And it was never anything grandiose. It was wonderful, sweet, daily comforts and guidances. It was the spirit that told me, when my mom beat my sisters and I, it was not because we were bad. It was because she was sick, and no one was healing her. No healing was being brought.
Yeah. What a blessing that was for you to be able to put what was happening in your life into a different context and give it a more spiritual perspective, I guess is what you would call it, so that you didn't just automatically react out of pain or sadness to what was going on. And you know.
Well, and it made all the difference in the world. I feel like it started to develop in me at a very young age a compassion and an understanding that, you know, when people are mean, when they're vicious, when they're violent, they're sick.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with someone who conducts themselves in that manner.
Well, and it's not just something wrong with them. It's usually emanating from a place of deep hurt and sadness, you know, or extreme pain. And so when you can see what the root causes are, it is easier to be compassionate and to
And that
blame.
In itself is an illness.
Yeah.
That in itself is an illness.
Yeah.
Damage done by trauma,
mm-hmm.
whether it's trauma of the heart, of the body, or of the mind, is still an injury. And when an injury goes unaddressed, untreated, unhealed, it remains an imbalance. Just like, you know, when I teach classes and I explain that, you know, we've come so far, we obviously accept, you know, cancer, AIDS, diabetes as illnesses, and we would never think of putting someone down for them. And we're starting to really understand that addictions, you know, they're illnesses. And we're starting to be more compassionate towards, you know, drug addicts and alcoholics. But we need to go all the way to the response of knowing that prejudice, that greed, that violence, infidelity, these are forms of illness, the forms of imbalance. And it's almost impossible to bring help to a situation until the calm of compassion can be put down as a foundation.
Absolutely. So please continue with how then, after you turned 16 and you realized that not everybody was hearing this voice,
Well, by the age of 16, I was on my own. I had obviously gone through a tremendous amount living with the mom that we had, because she continued to not receive any help for what was happening in her organic brain center. And my dad died when I was 13.
I see.
He was my best friend. And so by 16, I found myself out on my own. I had graduated high school at the age of 15 from a school in Jerusalem, Israel, because at the moment in time I found myself, the very best way to get away from my mom's cruelty was to volunteer to be a missionary, and I didn't care where the mission was going.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to Israel. So it was an amazing experience, and then I kind of, you know, I went through several years of just being absolutely snatched out of harm's way. I mean, like, to the point of, Sila, do not turn right around this corner. Turn left and go out where people and lights are.
My goodness.
You know, and really just being guided to avoid dangerous situations and assaults that could have very easily taken place. So I was constantly being protected and still had not really had any revelationary, you know, information handed to me. And then I found myself the counterpart, one half of a couple, where this was a doctor who graduated upwards, second in his class, I believe, from MIT a year early. He was a psychiatrist who also happened to be a master-level teacher on I Ching, Bach flowers, numerology, astrology, tarot, just an amazing combination for a medical practitioner.
Absolutely.
And I was not a student of any of these things. I was kind of, you know, along to keep the airline tickets. You know, we traveled quite extensively. He taught all over the world. And I would go with him and all over the U.S. And I would generally go find a museum or something like that. I really didn't fit in on any of these lectures because I was not even at a beginner's level at any of them. And then I found myself in Detroit in early, it was probably about just before 1980, I guess. And there was nothing to do. There were no museums. There were no botanical gardens. And so I looked at the lecture schedule, and I saw a girl from Larkspur, California, presenting a lecture on the hypothesis of healing with gems and minerals. And it was the only thing being offered at a beginner level. And I felt like, you know, I'd be interested to go. It was the only thing that I didn't have to have some fundamental background knowledge of to participate in.
Well, and, you know, just the sound of the workshop itself, I'm sure, was a lot more alluring than going and checking out, you know, the latest findings on the meridian system or something
yeah.
like that. Crystals yeah. and gemstones are beautiful to look at.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as I, you know, it was held in this large auditorium, and it was double doors, you know, on either side of the seating area to get into it. And as I put my hand on the double door to go into the auditorium, the voice that I'd always heard all my life from the entity that I met so long ago at 5, that energy touched me physically for the second time. It put a weight like a hand on my shoulder and said, "Listen very carefully today, Sila." And after listening to that lecture, I came away knowing what I was supposed to do, that I was supposed to take this hypothesis and develop it into a credible clinical system. Here I found myself with a doctor who had his own clinic, who treated people with every single malady under the sun,
what
who was proficient in alternative medicine.
What better place
and
to train in?
Yes, and he himself was a, you know, master of kinesiology.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lab all set up. So within 3 years of that day, this woman who gave the lecture was a student of mine.
Oh, my God. I was going to ask you whatever became of that woman, and did you ever keep up with her? That's incredible. So she is now a rock medicine practitioner?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, Liz, I have taught and taught and taught from that day. You know, the first couple years was very frustrating for me because the Spirit gave me two directives. The first one was, I may never charge money for treating people. And I thought, oh, how very altruistic of us. That makes us look wonderful. I'll get back to that point in a minute. But the second directive was, I may not solicit any patient. My first patient must come to me.
Right.
So I waited the first year, and what we did was we just tested people to try and get standards from the stones. We used kinesiology, and I started out with about 24 stones, and we started testing people to the degree of, like, calcite, for example. Everyone who we knew had cancer tested out to need calcite, and no one else did. So we were able to start by process of elimination, kind of working in reverse,
yeah.
determining what stones did what things. And after 3 years, we had about 10 stones that we knew the use of.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a girl who had really, she became my friend, just a social friend, but she was in the hospital a lot. She had over 280 skin grafts from having been burned when she was 7 years old. And at the point I met her, she was nearly 40. And she had a friend who happened to be the ex-mayor of Reno's daughter who was dying at the age of about 27 of cancer. And I was visiting with this girl at her house when this friend with cancer was leaving her parents' home for the hospital because they could no longer care for her in the end stages at their home. And she, my friend, had just had surgery. And so the girl came in the ambulance to my friend's house to say goodbye on her way to the hospital. And it was through this dynamic of these three energies, these three women coming together like this. And my friend said, she does healing with rocks and stones. And my friend had never even asked me to help her.
Right.
And this girl, Ronnie, looked at me and said, can you help me? Will you help me? And I said, absolutely. And I was ecstatic that I had finally had the first person. And the first person was somebody who was, you know, who'd been given 2 weeks to live, had no hair, and, you know, I mean, they were a mess.
Yeah.
And Ronnie today is happy and well and cancer-free and has been that way so since beautiful. A month after we treated her.
That is just so beautiful. Well, I know that there are many, many more stories like that from your own experiences, and I definitely want to ask you to share some more of those a little bit later on. But we have to take a break. So, Sheila, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Otherwhere on bbsradio.com. My name is Liz Miller. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll be back in just a moment.
We'll be right back.
great music you'll hear on the show this week comes to us courtesy of King Street Records, and they have given me a whole bunch of new promos to play. Regular listeners will be very familiar with the vocal stylings on this particular release, as they are from the silken tonsils of former Otherwear guest Joy Cardwell. A brand new remix there from production partner, the extremely talented Mr. Quentin Harris, and an unreleased dub that now has seen the light of day. And it's taken from a new Remix 12 that is coming out on the 25th, that's this coming Monday, and also features Danny Krivet on remix duties with his version, which doesn't sound that dissimilar from the original, coming in at over 10 minutes. More gems like this coming up later, but right now, let's get back to the isness of the business.
Downloading Otherwear.
Hi, this is Duncan Rhodes from Nexus Magazine, and you're listening to Liz Miller on Otherwear.
You're listening to Radio Otherwear on bbsradio.com, and Sheila Randazzo, the author of Rock Medicine, is my guest this week. She's been working with Rock Medicine for nearly 30 years now, and she takes very seriously the immense responsibility that she has been given to pass on this standardized system of using rocks, minerals and gems for balance and power the right way. Before long, the world will see that using the mineral kingdom for wellness is easy, inexpensive, and most of all, reliable. And that's something that I think all of us are definitely searching for when it comes to tools that we can use for health and wellness in our lives, things that are consistently good. And that's something that you can definitely count on with rocks that have been growing in the earth for, in some cases, millions and millions of years.
And you know, Liz, yes. I just want to say here, it's more than that. It's also that they're non-invasive. They're non-residual. They don't come with a whole lot of byproduct, side effects, dependencies. You know, I mean, so many of our maladies today, the treatment is worse than the illness.
Yes, yeah. But that's something that is just so wonderful, and I can attest to this from my own experiences, because Sheila, your book never leaves my bedside. I just want you to know that. I really don't like to have it very far away from me ever, because there are just so many applications and combinations that you can derive from the information that's in the book to help you in every area of your life, literally every single area of your life. And the number of times that people, members of my family or friends who've come over to my home, or if I've even gone out to visit them, you know, I've been able to use rock medicine for them, and you know, the looks on their faces after 10 minutes of holding a combination of stones or 20 minutes, it's just so fulfilling, because you know, they have this look of, first it's surprise, and then it's shock, and then it's wonder, mm-hmm. and joy. Mm-hmm. And it's just such an incredible system of healing to introduce into one's life and into the lives of others. So let's talk a little bit about a moment when you got a little bit older, where you went to a rainbow gathering, because from what I understand, this was a moment in your life where it seems that you were able to integrate and process much of the information that you'd already been working with, but you were given, in a kind of download, mm-hmm. a whole lot more. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that's a really good word to use for it, especially in this technological age. Yeah, I was at a rainbow gathering, and if people don't know what that is, it's just a gathering of people to. There's a lot of music. There's a lot of fellowship. It's completely non-denominational. It's a celebration of life and each other with a background of music. And during the music, I just kind of was no longer there in the crowd. I found myself standing in this long line. There was a long line of people. I mean, it was kind of like, If you've ever been to Disneyland, like the line never ends in front of you, never ends behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, it was my turn, and I came up to these three individuals standing there, and they were almost bored. But that's the only way that I can put it, maybe not bored, but tired. And the one that spoke to me said, it was a guide, and these three individuals standing in front of me, and the guide said, "This is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit." And I remember looking at the Holy Spirit and just saying, "You're a woman." And they looked at me and said, "How can you have a father and a son if their entity isn't female?" And I just went, "Oh!" And it was that casual.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they said to me, and they kind of, you know, motioned to their right, which was my left, and it seemed as if the whole wall beside me opened as a window. And I'll tell you, Liz, what I saw through that window were these liquid light beings dancing so joyously to the most incredible music. And the only way that I can describe it is one bead of sweat flying off one of these beings would not equal our collective impression of what joy was infinity fold.
When
they said, "This is heaven," I was like, "You bet it is. You don't have to tell me." And I just knew. And they said to me, right then and there, "This is heaven. If you have the chance to stay or leave, what do you choose to do?" And that's exactly how they said it. Like they'd said it so many times before, and it was becoming a recording. And I looked at them. I said, "Well, I want to stay as long as I can bring everyone else with me." And then everything became animated. They were like, "Congratulations. Oh, my God." They were celebrating. They were like, "You've got the job." And I found myself in this small octagonal room right away with a pedestal in the middle and this huge leather-bound book. It was massive. And a wind swept through, opened the cover, threw every page one at a time, rapid fire, to the other side, and then closed the book, and with that thud, I felt a thud right in the pit of my stomach, just about between my diaphragm and stomach. And I remember putting my hands up in the air and saying, "I know this work, and I can teach it." And I started saying that sentence in this room, but I finished the sentence with my back to the stage at the Rainbow Gathering, yelling this out facing 60,000 people.
That is such a great image.
Now, obviously, 60,000 people did not hear me say it or see me say it. But I'm telling you, the first three rows remain my friends to this day. And the odd thing was at the end of that show, at the end of that music, and when the gathering was going to disperse, I had this line of people. They were coming down from seats way up in the stadium, just filing past me, taking my hand. Many had tears in their eyes saying, "We're so glad you made it. I'm so honored to have been here for this day." It was absolutely amazing. I mean, I knew. I at that moment just started to pour out verbally and written about 130 stones, 120, 130 stones and what they did.
And how would that information come to you? It was just, would you hear it in your head or see a picture?
It came in many ways, but it started flooding out like right away. I mean, like somebody asked me, you know, would ask me what's for thyroid problems. That would let me know I was about to get another stone. And I mean, I was getting a couple of days, then a couple of week, you know. I mean, it just started to happen real rapid fire. And like cobalt,
sorry,
for example.
That was after you'd already begun to standardize those 10 stones, wasn't
that's
it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. 10 or 20 laboriously identified over a three-year period, and then within the next year, adding another 100 to that.
So it was like boom, 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 boom.
Oh, yes. Right. And they were all individualized circumstances. For example, I was at another rainbow gathering, and I remember a friend of mine who was working with crystals with me. You know, she was a student of mine, and she came up to me before the music started and handed me a stone. We were just kind of giddy little hippie girls, you know, having a good time. And she handed me a crystal. She goes, "Wait till you see what I bought." And she put it in my hand, and I didn't look at it because I was too enamored by this incredible cloud formation that looked like a perfect black and white photograph in the sky of an angel flying over the crowd.
Wow.
And I wasn't the only one seeing it. Everyone was looking up going, "Wow, that cloud formation is absolutely picture perfect." And I heard this multitude of voices say, "She's going to get another one. What? Oh, my God." And I was like, "What's happening?" Because I just started like to feel like I was reeling. And this was one of the most, one of the more important ones. And so the band that came on first was the Grateful Dead. They started the show. And I'm holding this crystal in my hand. And simultaneously, the band comes on stage and starts to play a song called Black Muddy River. When the voice said to me, "Sela, this is for water pollution." And then they said, "And if you doubt me, open your hand." And I looked down, and I had a piece of smoky quartz that was naturally carved into the shape of a fish, right down to bubbles coming out of its mouth.
Oh, how incredible.
And I just had tears streaming down my face.
Well,
I mean, there's a story like that for every stone.
Yep, such incredible validation. And you know,
oh, trust me, I learned the hard way not to question.
Yeah.
Because I was really dragged kicking and screaming to this, Liz. You have to understand, my dad was a chemist. He formulated unleaded gasoline.
Yeah, so and I believe that you came from a whole line of really renowned inventors and innovators in the
That's
science
correct.
Field.
My grandfather was a heart surgeon, and he built the first micro-optic surgical instrument.
Wow.
And my great-grandfather, he perfected the homogenization process for all Western dairy.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, I mean, I thought this influence early on into my teens, you know, I knew I was blessed. I knew I was going to do something powerful and wonderful because I had this guidance in my life. But, I mean, I was thinking, like, president.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Did you ever think about a science career, you know, in a strict sort of traditional sense?
Well, you know, you've got to understand, when my dad was murdered, my mom took my sisters and I away to this absolutely incredibly radical Pentecostal holiness campground in the backwoods of Virginia where we were isolated and abused. And, I mean, my mom didn't know what grades we were in or if we were passing in school. She just, you know, it was like Jonestown.
Right.
So the thought of my going to school or choosing a career never entered my mind. I was more worried about surviving to the age of 18.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I mean, so, but, you know, I really, for the first 9 years, I would get tons of confirmation. And then I would get scared again and say, "Oh, my God, either I'm straitjacket material or the Almighty is sending a new order of healing to this planet through me." And I was really scared for so many years that maybe I was straitjacket material. Then I got to thinking about it and realized that's not the scarier of the two. What am I thinking? So about 9 years into it, I had a friend who was going for a PhD, and she was writing her thesis. And I went to the library with her because I've always been a kid from second grade. I've always been a kid who the dictionary and the encyclopedia were like my playground. I loved reading facts and, you know, about just any subject. It didn't matter. And So I was just kind of sitting there in the library keeping her company, and she was busy. And so I looked at my name, and I could not believe what the translation of my name was. It's my birth name, Sheila Weideman. So I looked it up in another language, then in another language. And 7, 8, 9 languages, it translated to the same thing. And that was Rock Shepherd. So it was at that point that I just went, okay.
Yeah, I surrender.
All right. All right, that's it. No more, you know, gumming up the works, no more holding up the parade.
Mm.
And I just started really working to share it everywhere I went. I mean, I was once flying from Philadelphia to San Francisco, and I had a layover in Phoenix. My layover was at like 2:30 in the morning, and I had two obese janitors with blood pressure problems in the ladies' room sitting there on the bench learning rock medicine from me. So I just, you know, I've taught it and shared it and spoken it and given it ever since then, everywhere I go.
Mm.
And actually, I don't know how many of your listeners have bought the book, Rock Medicine, or how many have studied it or read it, but I kind of have taken the last year off, and my kind of re-debut of myself back into being available to people and out giving lectures and doing interviews and accessible to those who need me is this radio show tonight.
Oh, I'm very honored. Thank you. Have you got any plans to put out a new edition of Rock Medicine at all? And, you know, have there been any new bits of information that have come through that you'd like to include in another version of it if you were to do that?
You know, to be honest with you, that is probably the single most often asked question. And every time I turn to who I ask about those things, I just get the same answer, and that is, get this down first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get these stones down first, because the first book contains the information to address this planet and we with her flat on our backs. This is emergency measures. You know, we are in a critical, critical situation. We have destroyed our water. We've destroyed our soil. We've destroyed our air. So much so that the vegetation is not able to sustain life, to sustain healing. We don't have non-toxic food. We don't have non-toxic medicine except for the mineral kingdom. And that's another reason why I was given the information, because we came very close, perilously close, to destroying the mineral kingdom, which is our last living kingdom, before we discovered what it was able to do. Because we only have the animal, vegetable, and mineral kingdom in this third dimension, in this physical plane.
Yes, but in each one of
those... And we have poisoned the first two.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. In each one of those kingdoms, we've been given everything we need for our healing and well-being.
That's correct.
And now that, you know, I mean, of course, there are still tiny little pockets of places in certain areas where you can get pure and wonderful food, but... You know, it's not available on your supermarket shelves.
That's right.
So
and it's the same with herbs.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's not cost effective. It's not readily available for the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And those that are producing it are doing so carefully and with intent.
Yes.
For their own and their own small circle of need.
Yeah.
Not out of selfishness, but because they realize they have an opportunity to be holding the last vestige of non-toxic, non-poisoned animal and vegetable kingdom. So, you know, oftentimes I really feel as though, because if you look at my sisters with me, Liz, they were raised by the same mom in the same crazy circumstance as I was, and they're severely damaged from it. Severely, with a lot of memory loss, with a lot of denial, trouble with their own interpersonal relationships with spouses and children and even each other and with the world around them. And if you put the four of us together, it looks like someone different raised me. And so if I were to have to qualify or choose one of the available circumstances that we study, that people share, I would say that that moment that I looked into the mirror at 5 years old was probably a moment that I became a walk-in, that little hurt Sila that was being raised in a cruel, physically, emotionally, and mentally abusive household just stepped out.
And you believe that there was some kind of a walk-in soul exchange situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Have you explored that since you've become an adult and tried to find out more about that?
I haven't because I'm too busy.
Right.
Because I'm too busy treating AIDS, diabetes, leukemia, MS. You know, the hardest part of this work is that the people closest to me are the ones least willing to use it.
I was just about to ask, seeing that your sisters are still obviously in suffering mode, it sounds like they haven't really taken on the use of rock medicine to help heal themselves, which is, I'm sure, incredibly saddening and probably pretty frustrating for you.
Well, you know, it's baby steps, and once I was able to get petrified wood bracelets on two of my sisters, now they won't leave home without it.
Correct.
They always have it on.
And quickly, tell people what petrified wood is for.
Oh, petrified wood, it's something everyone should have on them, absolutely everyone, because it's anti-stress. It's a shield stone. It doesn't get toxic. It protects you like a shield. So you can put it on a ring, a bracelet, a necklace, earrings, whatever you want, and you can literally wear it 24/7. Now, what it does is close the gap between the highs and lows. You still can have really high highs, but the lows aren't as far away. You don't get thrown into just the depths of depression. You know, we're all connected here. So none of us can be fully well until all of us are. And so much as we work on our individual illnesses and diagnoses, the stress of being connected to a humankind that is so put upon and so stressed in and of themselves, petrified wood is a godsend. It's a lifesaver. And it's also the best introduction for people who kind of aren't oriented to metaphysics or are not oriented to alternative methods, especially those that are geared more towards energy work like this is, because you don't ingest the stones, you don't pulverize them, you don't, you know, eat them or drink them in powder form. They are matter in motion, and each stone is made up specifically of chemicals. All rose quartz is the same chemical that makes up rose quartz. So having something so in your face as stress on a daily basis, and all illness is made exacerbated by stress, it's the very best thing. I mean, especially when I run into somebody like in a work situation who comes to work and something has happened and they're just a mess, I'll take my bracelet off and say, put this on. And it takes less than 3 minutes. And like you described, that couple minutes of where just every emotion possible passes across their face because they just can't believe how fast this change is taking place. Petrified wood works immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. And in touching base with the fact that these stones are all individualized chemistry, you know, I just want to get this in. I want to make sure I get this in because this is so important. You know, just like people tend to aggrandize me personally more than is appropriate, which I understand because it's a phenomenal gift of information. But I am quite literally UPS. I've just been handed a package that I am delivering to the people it belongs to already, which is everyone.
Yeah, but you know what? You're not just throwing it on the front doorstep. You're delivering it on a silver platter. And you know, to that, you do need to be recognized.
Well, you know, and just like that, the stones themselves, you know, if you have a bowl full of rose quartz and somebody needs a piece of rose quartz, you don't pick them up one at a time and wait for one to sing a song to you. That would be like if you were going to take a vitamin and you dumped the bottle of vitamins out on the table and started picking them up one at a time to see which vitamin you were supposed to take that day. We don't do that because we trust that all of those vitamins in that bottle marked ABC vitamins are the same.
Yes.
And the stones are the same.
Yep.
Every piece of rose quartz does the same exact thing as every other piece.
And size, does that matter?
Size does not matter. A piece the size of a grain of sand does exactly the same as a piece the size of a Volkswagen. And when you understand this about your tools, that they're tools, you know, I've caused, you know, certain people no end of distress when I've run across someone who, you know, needs a piece of rose quartz and they need it now, and so I take my piece out and I'm like, got a hammer, and I bash it up, and they're like, oh my God, don't treat them like that. And it's like, what are you talking about? They, you know, they're instruments, they're tools.
Yeah.
And if you have a piece that can be broken down into 10 smaller pieces, then you've got 10. Then you've got 9 pieces that you can gift to others to bring relief from grief to. Do people actually believe that this huge hunk of rose quartz, whose chemistry and message from the divine is to relieve the pain of grief over loss, is saying, now, don't take anything off me, though. Don't mess with me.
Yeah,
Don't take any pieces off of me, though.
It's preposterous to think about it like that, isn't it? And considering, you know, the size of the rocks in proportion to the sizes of our bodies and all of that stuff, when you take all that away, it really doesn't matter. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing that I caution people is don't ever give your last piece of any tool away.
Yeah.
Because I'll guarantee you that is what you will need the very next time you turn around.
Tell me about it. Do you know how many pieces of halite I've had to buy?
Oh, I know.
Just because so many people come and they've got joint pains or, you know, there's something wrong with the tendons and put it in their hand and they go away and say, oh my God, it's completely healed. And I say, well, take this away and use it the next couple of days, every 4 hours.
And you never see it again.
I never see it again. And, you know, I mean, halite, really quickly, if we just explain to people what that is purely rock salt that has been...
It is. It's a form of salt.
Yeah, that has been crystallized and is millions and millions of years old. But salt, as we all know, because we eat it all every day, is a mineral. And it's an important mineral in our systems. And when we come back, that's exactly what we need to get into. The way that the crystals actually pull the minerals that are in the crystals themselves, when we hold them, are actually bringing the minerals in our bodies that are the same as the minerals in the rock in our hand into resonance with them and literally bringing them back into their correct frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking to Sheila Randazzo. She is the author of Rock Medicine. And Sheila, is it still on Blue Dolphin or is there a new publisher now?
Well, the publishing company is Life Force Publications. And Life Force Publications has the book available through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, but you can actually go to most any bookstore. Amazon, to be honest with you, is going to have the best price. You can go to any bookstore, though, and if they don't carry it, they can order it.
Fantastic. So when we come back, we're going to be getting into some of those specific uses of crystals and gems that you can use in your own life for health and well-being and a general sense of connectedness to all. So that's when we come back on Otherwhere.
Here's a brand new track, and I gotta say, a welcome new kind of sound from Night Grooves, a division of King Street, with a release from Ecologist. I love it. It's spelled E-C-H-O-L-O-G-I-S-T, who returns to Night Grooves for a second time, bringing more of his super dub sonic sounds to this release. Known also as Beat Pharmacy, who I think many of you have heard of, this is called Wonders, and it has enough bleeps to satisfy even the most seasoned tech head that bubble up in the mix of this synthy electric deep house workout. Enjoy. Next week on the program, I'll be joined by leading Australian trance channel and author of the new book, The Lightworker's Companion. Her name is Amanda Guggenheimer, and I mentioned last week that I'm counting on all of you to please let as many people as possible know about this broadcast. Amanda is somebody that I'd like you to meet very much. She was born in Melbourne, Australia, in 1978, and at the age of 17, she began her formal training in the field of meditation, spiritual development, and healing. A year later, she was invited to attend Ravenswood Healing Centre, where she trained, then taught for 4 years. At the age of 22, Amanda began her private practice as a channel and spiritual development consultant. She now has numerous clients in Australia and throughout the world. The Lightworker's Companion is Amanda's first book and combines channeled information with her own experiences to provide readers with a vehicle to facilitate their own connection with the higher realms. Naturally, we'll be discussing her book and fascinating life so far, which I think many of you will find very inspiring. And one of the Ascended Masters that Amanda works with regularly and also helped to write The Lightworker's Companion is Saint Germain. Next week on Otherware, we will be presenting an exclusive channeling through Amanda of Saint Germain live. He'll be delivering a message specifically for the Otherware and BBSRadio.com audience that I hope you do not miss for anything. Many of you will know of Saint Germain as there are lightworkers all over the planet who regularly invoke his violet flame for transmutation of negative energies. But if you've not heard of him before, he is an enigmatic historical figure who is said to have made his ascension in the 17th century, and he is said to have incarnated many times on Earth, always for the purpose of awakening to their highest possibility. He now works with channels, performers, and artists alike. He is an advocate of the healing and transformational power of humour, laughter, and comedy. And he is committed to assisting in the conservation and preservation of the environment. He is also said to work within the Galactic Councils to ensure humanity is prepared to move into a new vibration, and to take a leap in consciousness and perceive things differently. And if you didn't think it could get any better than that, as an added treat, Saint Germain has asked that we do a special meditation that he has given us in Amanda's book, which is designed to assist you to get in touch with your higher aspects. So we will have another extra long relaxation at the end of that show. I do hope that you join Amanda, myself, and Saint Germain next week on Otherware. Now let's return to our dialogue about healing with crystals, minerals, and gemstones.
BBSRadio.com.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Otherware, and this is BBSRadio.com. My name is Liz Miller, and I'm your host. Our guest this week is Sheila Randazzo. She wrote the book Rock Medicine, which I highly recommend. It's one of my favourite books. It's definitely in my top five, and it has definitely saved my life again and again and again. And so I'm so pleased to bring Sheila Randazzo onto the show so that she can share as much information as we can cram into the time that we have today, so that you can go away after hearing this program, whether you've worked with crystals before or not, and apply rock medicine in your own life. So, Sheila, let's talk about how important crystals have become in our lives, because every day in our modern world, we're relying on crystal technology more and more, from, you know, running our cars to spaceships and watches and radios and phones and everything. Of course, mm-hmm. We all know about the beginnings of crystal technologies in the form of radio or crystal radio sets. Mm-hmm. And I just think that whole idea of how a little needle made of metal can scratch along a crystal, and when it has hit a certain atomic lattice structure that is in the same frequency, that harmonizes with a wave of sound that's coming through the sky, that we can pick up radio broadcasts across the world. You know, that in itself is pretty miraculous.
Yeah, and you know, what you're talking about is actually what our most abundant crystal formation is on the planet, and that's clear quartz.
Yeah, and it's
that
an
is
amplifier.
What's used in the apparatus, and it is a little PA system.
Yeah.
It amplifies everything that it comes in contact with. And I think this is a really important place to start, because there are so many people who equate such abilities to the simple quartz crystal, when really what it does is amplify. If you're happy, if you're healthy, if you're well, it'll amplify it. If you're sick, if you're sad, if you're depressed, if you're angry, it'll amplify it. But beyond that, because minerals resonate to their own kind first,
this is how we can share rock medicine so inexpensively. Because you can take a combination of, say, 10 stones that we would use for a person with insulin-dependent diabetes, and we can put those 10 stones in a gallon plastic Ziploc bag with 1,000 pieces of quartz crystal. They don't have to be perfect points. They don't have to be without chips. They can just be real pieces of quartz crystal. And then you leave those 10 stones for diabetes in that bag, and 3 hours later, you will have 1,000 pieces of quartz crystal that can be used as those 10 stones combined over and over. Now, there are some methods by which we need to keep the vibration in the stones. For example, if you wanted to take one of those stones away from the bag and mail it to someone halfway across the world or give it to someone to take with them to their house so that they have it to use and reuse, you'd want to put it into a bottle of water. You want to do so without physically contacting the stone. So you use a rubber glove or a plastic spoon or chopsticks that are wooden or plastic. You don't want to touch metal to it, because the whole principle of these stones working is conductivity. That's why they work. So you could take these 1,000 stones one at a time out of the bag without coming in physical contact with them, whatever that takes, rubber gloves, plastic gloves, whatever, and drop them in bottles of water, gallons of water, and just distribute them. So you've taken from you 10 little stones that cost you maybe $15 total, and you've now been able to give an entire treatment, not for maintenance, but for healing, to 1,000 people with insulin-dependent diabetes.
That's so
incredible. How inexpensive is that?
That's what's so wonderful about rock medicine. It's so accessible. It's so available, and it's so shareable. And yeah, once you have the basic ingredients, you can just keep making them replicate themselves, basically.
And listen to this: you can take your gallon jug with the quartz crystal in it that's been set for treating diabetes, and you can fill bottles from that unendingly. As long as you leave the water in the jug with the crystal for 3 hours, you can pour all but the least little bit out. As long as the crystal remains underwater, fill that bottle up again, let it sit for 3 hours. You can fill dropper bottles to your heart's content. This is literally the lamp that never runs out of oil.
It feels to me as though this medicine has been saved for us, you know, that it's been put in a form that we can't really tamper with too much.
It's been saved from us.
Yeah, from us. Yeah, that's actually much more like it, isn't it? So we've just been talking about one of the forms of using crystals, and that is in making an essence with water. What are the other methods of using crystals?
Well, you know, I tell you, the most expeditious way to heal with rock medicine is once you have a proper diagnosis, and that is critical. Nobody that comes to me who says, "See, well, I have a pain right here, what should I do?" I will say, go to a doctor, find out what it is. As soon as you know what it is, then come to me and tell me what it is, and now we can talk about what stones we use to treat that particular malady.
Well,
that's number one.
They're not for diagnosis. They're definitely just for treating.
That's correct. The second phase would be, now we've identified the problem and we know what stones to combine, because the stones make a sentence.
Yes.
It's never just one stone.
Could you please tell us what the structure of that sentence is?
Well, you know, the stones work in concert with each other. They talk to each other, so to speak. We have what we call our seven cleansers. Anybody who has any physical malady is going to need the seven cleansers. That's a given. Because the seven cleansers work to purify the blood, to purify the oxygen content, to purify the water in your system, to strengthen your immune system, to detox from radiation, which planet-wide levels have risen and have become a real integral part of what is causing such widespread illness planet-wide. You know, so we've got the jade, which is the grandfather stone of healing, which pulls down the block that caused the toxicity. And then you've got amber, which is the memory. Now, here's how amazing just one stone, the amber being the memory, works off your DNA. Let's say that you were born diabetic, and so was your mom, and so was your grandmother, but your great-grandmother was not. The amber searches your DNA pattern until it finds the non-diabetic state of wellness that your great-grandmother's DNA is replicated in your DNA strand and locks onto it for a map back to a non-diabetic state.
Mm, and we all know amber is that beautiful honey-colored stone that you can often find preserved insects in that are millions of years old.
It is our oldest, one of our oldest minerals.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a half a million years for the sap from the tree to become the crystal form of amber.
Right.
And so it's extremely old. And the chemical composition of amber is such that it does preserve DNA. So I think the nature of amber is to preserve those insects in such an intact manner. The insect's presence or lack of insects present has nothing to do with the amber's ability to form its job. Or, you know, I'll tell you what was pretty amusing to me is if you saw the movie Jurassic Park,
right,
that they said they were able to replicate the dinosaurs because they found mosquitoes in amber
That's right.
They retrieved the dinosaur DNA from.
Yeah.
So when that movie first came out, I had to laugh because I was thinking how so not far off base they were.
I wanted to ask you about if we could get back to the structure of the rock sentences. How would a rock sentence be structured? Is there a what in there and a where?
Well, there are some standards. Like, let's take the stone emerald. The stone emerald says the back.
Okay.
Okay? But think about your back. You've got skin on your back. Maybe you have a boil. Maybe the boil has fluid in it. You've also got a skeletal structure that is your back. You've also got a muscular structure that makes up your back. And so you could have an affliction or a malady that's on the surface of the skin, or it could be a problem with your bones, or it could be a problem with the muscles. So you're going to start with the stone emerald because it says back, and then depending on what you put with it, you're saying what in the back. So if you put rhodochrosite, which says epidermis, you're saying it's the skin on the back. If you put it with coral, which says calcification, which is your bones, then you're saying the backbone, the skeletal structure in the back is affected. And that's what we're trying to elicit wellness for.
And that's how the stones, so to speak.
And that's how the stones work.
Yeah, and that's how they
really
talk to each
other. It's like learning a language, Liz. That's the best way to explain it. You know, I have people who have quite honestly called me for maybe even 5 or more years who have said, okay, I've got this friend who's got this problem. What stones do I use? And that's why I wrote the book, and that's why Creator gave me the book. The book is not a novel. It's not a story. The book is a domestic use guide. The book actually has all the information in it that people need. Because, face it, not every single person can call me. Nor should they have to. Wellness is a gift. And medicine is how you get there. And there's many forms of medicine. But the rock medicine treats the spirit, the mind, and the physical body at the same time,
to truly eradicate the being of imbalance. And so as people learn what each and every stone does, then it is said, yes, I speak mineral. You know, if you can speak Spanish, you practice it and you get to know the individual words, the verbs, the structure of the sentences, to the point of being able to go to anywhere in the world that that is their native language and converse without stumbling, without saying the wrong thing. But it took the effort to learn the language. And that's what rock medicine is. If people learn the 100 stones, there's nothing they will know that I don't know.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that I will know that they don't.
If we could get back to some of the other ways that you can...
The methods of application.
Yeah, the methods of application, because we've talked about now essences and making the rock sentences. Now, you would... The next way would be to hold the stones in your hand.
Well, hand-holding them is if you put the forms of application kind of in order, the first and best and most expeditious form of utilizing the stones is holding the proper combination in your hand. Right hand for women, left hand for men. At a 20-minute time frame and intervals of 4 to 6 hours.
And if people were to hold them for longer than 20 minutes, would there be any negative effect?
It would not work adversely, but it would void the application.
Yep. So
think
it's
of it
important.
As if you were filling a glass.
Yeah.
If you're filling a glass with fluid, there's a point at which you reach full. You continue pouring, and it spills back out. That's kind of loosely an analogy as to what happens with the stones. You hold them up to 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, you put them down. You let them clear on their own 3 to 4 hours before you hold them for a second application. You want to do this 4 times a day because this is kind of like teaching a kid to ride a bike. You are teaching your body its balance points again, whether you're treating for cancer or diabetes or leukemia or no matter what you're treating for. You're teaching the body by repetition of resource what the balance points are. So just like teaching a child to ride a two-wheeler where you're holding the seat and you're waiting for them to feel that point of balance where all of a sudden they get it and they don't need you to hold the seat anymore and they can go off and ride their bike from then on because they found the point of balance, they recognize it, they know what it feels like, and they can maintain it. That's what the stones do for the body. So this repetition, whether it's hand-holding or essence, this is what makes it work, that you do it at intervals. It's not a magic bullet. You don't just hold one stone one time and, you know, miraculously all is healed. It is still medicine.
Yeah, well, holding the rocks in your hand or taking the essence is going to introduce the frequency of those stones in their pure and sort of best frequencies, their ideal frequencies.
That's exactly correct. It works by way of electricity.
Yeah.
You know, life force is electricity. When we say there's 3 living kingdoms, animal, vegetable, and mineral, the only thing that makes them a living kingdom is they emit an electrical charge. Now, it's easy to see when a member of the animal kingdom or a member of the vegetable kingdom is no longer emitting an electrical charge. They're dead. But the mineral kingdom, you have to take a piece of mineral below an atomic level for it to lose its electrical charge.
Oh, that's
as long as you have one cell, as long as you have one atom of that crystal, you have the life force, the electrical charge. Now, since we are, and so is the vegetable kingdom, predominantly water, we're made up of over 87% water. What do we know about electricity? Water conducts it very well. So when you put the stones in your hand, those stones immediately start sending the electrical charge or the vibration based upon the individual chemistry of the stones chosen for the malady, coursing through your system. It's riding on the water. It's riding on the water in your skin and your blood. And it is going through your body, seeking out those areas that it correlates, looking for imbalance in the areas that the stones represent. Now, let's say you gave someone a stone combination for cancer, and they didn't have cancer. Well, holding the stones would do nothing, because the stones are all talking to each other. Let's say somebody felt a lump in their breast and didn't go get it checked, and all it was a benign cyst, a tissue formation. But they took it upon themselves to assume that this is the worst case scenario, so they held the blue calcite, which is gland. They held, you know, the amethyst, which is for cell division. They put the seven cleansers. They put these stones together for breast cancer. These stones would go from their hand, coursing through their body, looking for the breast, because that is the stone that you're telling them the area is. It's in the mammary gland. And the stones would not find cancer, so they would do nothing. They know that this is all in balance over here. We don't have to do anything.
Yeah, so that's a really good thing to know also, that you can't actually, you know, hold stones and if there's nothing wrong with you, they won't actually go in and harm you in any other area just because the thing that you thought was wrong with you isn't present. They'll actually just be inert.
This is true. However, there are a few stones that come with a safeguard.
Oh, really? Let's
hear about amethyst,
those.
For example.
Oh,
and I always
course,
like
yeah.
to share amethyst because it's such a popular crystal.
Yeah, a lot of people just are so drawn to the color of it, that deep,
mm-hmm.
beautiful violet purple color.
Mm-hmm. Amethyst is like a little soldier with blinders on that says, cells divide, cells divide, cells divide. Well, if you are healthy and well, cell division is a great thing. It speeds up cell division. If you have a physical malady that you're working with, you've got to have amethyst with the combination, because you're telling the other stones, we're working on physical cells here. We need the cells to divide in a healthy manner. However, let's say you had a tumor growing and you held or wore or carried just a piece of amethyst. That amethyst is just saying, cells divide, cells divide, cells divide. It is not making a distinction between ill and well cells. It's not taking any other message with it. It's just telling all the cells in your body to divide faster, farther. So if someone has a physical malady, especially a tumor, they are actually accelerating the growth of a tumor if they apply amethyst by itself.
Actually, this is one of the pieces of information that when I read it for the first time, I really was so grateful to you and to everyone who helped you bring this information through, because, as you know, Sheila, there are many, many books out there on crystals. And for the novice, it can be very confusing, and I can tell you from my own experience what it was like, wanting so desperately to work with crystals in the best way that I could, mm-hmm. then going out and looking at all of the different materials I could draw from, and there was just so many, you know, dissonant bits of information. You could read an entry on amethyst in 10 different books and have 10 different explanations. And so, you know, for the first time when I came across your material, I felt like I could truly trust what you had to say. And that's something that is so valuable in the field of working with crystals and gems. Who do you trust? Who's got uh-huh. the right answers? And uh-huh. who's got the most updated information? Because, you know, the crystals are evolving just like us, just uh-huh. like the plants are.
That's correct.
And so at different times in the evolution of the stones, I'm sure they have different uses, different applications that we can then use them for. And in fact, in the book, there is one stone, turquoise, that you mention was used a long time ago for different things, but now has almost been retired.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Turquoise is like a great grandmother who has earned a rest. It stands as a symbol and a reminder of the last modern society to use stones for healing.
Are you talking about
the Native Americans?
Oh.
And its job did not disappear. Just it doesn't do the job anymore. The job that is now done by what turquoise used to do is chrysocolla, which is actually the same family, the same copper family.
And they even look
only
the same.
Chrysocolla is like the teenager that, if
right.
left in the ground, becomes turquoise.
Okay, that makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
And diamonds. Let's talk about diamonds, because we all know how precious they are. And
mm-hmm.
one of the reasons is because of their superb clarity and fire. You know, the whole story of a diamond is just wonderful. They're born out of volcanic chimneys and the blackest of black carbon.
Mm-hmm.
But over millions and millions of years, the diamond has been formed and become something that is perfectly clear and mm-hmm. allows the light to shine through it unimpeded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the diamond is maybe the first in the mineral kingdom to have reached perfection.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And it was at the same time, because it is all connected, the animal, vegetable, and mineral kingdom. Diamond is what connects us as human beings when we wear it or touch it or drink an essence of it. It connects us to divine consciousness. And so, you know, they look at the evolution of man, they look at the evolution of life on this planet, and they're constantly saying, you know, where was that leap made? Where was that missing link? Where did we go from kind of being beasts in the animal kingdom to the human representation with the thought processes and the ability to reason like we do? And it was at that moment that the first diamond was perfected in the planet, and it resonated through the planet, through the water, through the soil, right up into contact with the beings on the planet. A lot of people think that, you know, this life changing evolution came from space down.
Right.
But it came from Earth out.
It's a wonderful way of looking at it. And yes, there is a lot of, I guess there is a huge attitude out there of thinking that it all is coming from the top down. It's a really good way of turning that belief on its head, actually.
Well, I like that we've touched on two of the three stones that I say people should have on them at all times. One is diamond, the other is petrified wood. And the other thing I'd like to say about the diamond is, you know, by and large, many, 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 many more women than men wear diamonds. And that is why we have become the stronger gender. We are wiser. We are less apt to run towards violent solutions as a gender. Now, I'm not talking about individuals. I'm not saying there aren't any men that are kind and calm. And there aren't any women that are violent and overt. But as a gender force, women are the more level heads on the planet than the males are at this point in history.
And with the awakening also of the divine feminine energies, there's a whole lot of people now on the planet's surface who are very consciously working with those more intuitive, receptive, feminine, gentler energies, men and women, that that's also helping. But, you know, when you think about ancients and the way that they used crystals and gems, I mean, think about all of the royalty and the incredible headdresses that they would wear, the breastplates that they would wear that were encrusted in gems and stones, their armory, their weaponry. It was all to protect, to strengthen, and to give them the advantage, basically.
Well, even more than that, those who are familiar with Judaism, Moses' brother Aaron was the first high priest, and when in the historical teachings, they actually got specific scientific direction on how to build the temple, the size of it, the where the architectural, you know, design was. It is said that Aaron had a breastplate that had two quartz crystals. One was called the Ummim and one was called the Thummim. And there was three rows of four precious stones representing the 12 tribes. And that breastplate was not a symbol and it was not adornment. What it was an actual apparatus. It is said that when someone with a conflict would come to Aaron as the ultimate judge of that group of the 12 tribes, that they would put to Aaron their cases and they would watch as he would the breastplate and one or the other crystal would light up to indicate where truth was. So this is actual apparatus.
Yeah, these are technologies.
Yes, yeah. Actual technology.
Yeah.
Just like Atlantis is said to have been powered completely with literally, you know, I hate to say machines, they were, you know, methods of conveyance. They had what we would call planes, they had, you know, motorized boats, they had vehicles that were powered by crystal configurations. They had lights and electricity in their habitats that were no more than crystal configurations. And that's the amazing thing about rock medicine, because if, you know, I heard you ask, you know, is there another book? Are there more stones? Or, well, yes, there are more stones. And right now, I probably only have not even 10 more than are in the book. You know, I have a friend whose husband asks me all the time, Sheila, is there a stone for baldness? I say, you know what, there probably is, but it just doesn't happen to be one of the critical emergency stones that Creator feels we need
right
at this point in time.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's if you look at the array of stones that we've been given in this first volume, if you look at what they do, they do an amazing amount. I mean, there's stones for greed. There's stones for truth. There's a stone for not just speaking the truth, but eliciting the truth, discerning the truth.
Which stone is that?
Celestite. Recognizing the truth. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal to me that a stone can relieve stress, can ease grief, can cure cancer, can eliminate the HIV virus from someone's bloodstream, but can also affect change and bring balance to someone who's greedy or violent or angry. I mean, we have been given an incredible starter toolbox, and I don't believe we will be given additional volumes until we master the one we have.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Because
too.
I don't think there's anything that's missing from the first volume that would give us a level playing field to build upon.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like to ask about teleportation, and you know, it's funny. There's a stone in the book that is for vision. You know, there's a stone for prophecy. And I'm always amazed at how many people come to my classes or come to my lectures, and you know they've got thick glasses on and they're obese, and you can see that there's skin problems, and you know they have arthritis. You can tell because of the way they walk, but they just want to know about these stones that enable them to prophesy or tell the future.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm nowhere near using those stones personally. I'm still trying to make sure that I'm not carrying the toxins that the industrial polluters are burping into the air around in my body.
Yeah. It's a pretty typical thing, though. People just want to rush ahead without having done the groundwork first.
Absolutely.
To have the big experiences. And unfortunately, it's a shortcut to failure.
It is. And you know what? There's a lot of abilities that we have, like teleportation, that we don't need a stone for, because once we get our physical selves to a point of wellness that we are using more than the 6% of our brain that we use now, we will find ourselves so well and so balanced that many of these ancient and divine abilities that we've just lost touch with will return, because we're so clear of toxins.
Yeah, that's going to be a good day.
Yeah.
A really good day when that happens.
And that's why it's so important to me to share it, because we are all connected. I'm not going anywhere without anybody else like that, you know. That was kind of the deal I made.
Actually, you know about going somewhere in terms of getting to that heaven state? There's a lot of talk right now about how it's not so much about ascension, what we're doing, the process that we're in, and all the clearing that we're having to go through right now in order to get to that wonderful place. It's really more about us anchoring heaven onto earth.
That's exactly what it is. We are creating heaven here.
Yeah.
And the stones are a large part of that process.
I totally agree.
Because heaven does not exist anywhere yet, Liz.
It exists when we create it, doesn't it?
That's right.
When we all get there together.
You tell me who's sitting in heaven that you and I aren't there with them.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody.
No one.
We're either all there or no one's there.
We're going to have to take another quick break, but will you stay with us for one more segment?
I absolutely will.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry it's gone a little longer than I thought it would, but, you know, I just can't let you go yet because there are just too many things I need to ask you. So thank you, Sheila. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Sheila Randazzo about rock medicine. And we're going to get into some more specific uses of the stones. Well, we're also going to talk about the Master Blend and the Seven Cleansers a little bit more, because these are two very important parts of rock medicine that I think everyone out there should know about. And I'm also going to ask Sheila about some of the other uses of crystals that rock medicine doesn't cover, like layouts on the body, grids, and the use of wands. So that's all when we return on Otherwhere.
From Matteo and Matos, a favourite production duo of mine that I was lucky enough to help promote when they toured in Australia a few years ago. Haven't heard much from them lately, but it's good to see their new wax coming out on King Street. That was a funky little track entitled Celestial Movements. And it's out right now. You can find it on KingStreetSounds.com.
Online.
You're listening to BBSRadio.com, and if you've just joined us, we're here on Otherwhere with Sheila Randazzo, and she is the author of Rock Medicine and the main proponent, researcher and developer of rock medicine in the planet today, and she's got such incredible, wonderful information to share with us. And I know that in the next segment we're all going to be able to take away some really very useful information from this interview that you can use practically in your life. And I'd like to start with a combination of stones that you recommend at the beginning of your book, which are the seven cleansers. These are one of three different combinations of stones that you prescribe. The seven cleansers basically take care of general cleansing in the physical body. Mm-hmm. Then you have the master blend and the shield stones. Would you please explain to the audience what those three different groups of stones represent?
Well, the seven cleansers, as you so appropriately put it, are cleansing for the physical body. Now, they represent taking down the block. Wherever there is illness, it's because a block has been thrown up. And then the second stone, that first stone is jade. Then there's amber, which is for the memory of wellness, the DNA. Then you've got the hematite, the smoky quartz, and the pyrite, which purifies the water, the blood, and the oxygen in your body. Then you've got clay, which strengthens and balances the immune system. Then you've got covalite to combat the effects of the raised radiation levels planet-wide. That represents the entire body system. Everything in the body that is the basis of its wellness patterns and foundation. We always recommend that people use the seven cleansers first, and we recommend that they use the seven cleansers as a basis for all of the specific stones they would add to it. Think of it kind of like a white sauce, if you know what a white sauce is. All gravies and all kinds of things can be made out of this basic white sauce, depending on what spices and flavorings you add to it. Well, the seven cleansers are the white sauce. Now, if you're trying to do strictly a physical balancing and correcting, you would add amethyst to that, because that brings it down to a cellular level. That would make it eight stones. So that's a general cleansing of the body. Then you have a grouping of 33 stones called the master blend. And I'm not going to go through each of those, but perhaps you could put each of these lists up on your website, Liz.
Yes, I would like to direct people.
And make them available.
Yes, if anyone would like to have a look at those lists, please go to the bbsradio.com webpage, click on Otherwhere, and you'll find that list come up straight away. Or you can go to my weblog, which is at otherwhere.blogspot.com. Sorry to interrupt. Please go ahead.
That's okay. The master blend is a combination of 33 stones that actually prepares a person for wellness. Now, there's so much that could be said about this. There's stones in there that represent guilt, that represent blame, that represent truth, that, you know, illness happens first in the spirit. And when it goes undiagnosed and untreated, it drops down to the mind. If it continues to go undiagnosed and untreated, then, because we are creatures of survival, it drops down into the physical body and manifests as an ailment, as an illness, even as an accident. So any time we have an imbalance in the body, we have to know that there is a correlating imbalance in the mind and in the spirit, And we have to treat all three.
Yeah, in another way, you could say that the unseen is the parent of the seen.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly correct. Now, if someone comes to me and has quite a large grouping of maladies, and because we are beings of survival, our body will not let one area fail completely. What usually happens is someone has an imbalance somewhere. When it gets to a certain point, the body kind of throws part of this imbalance to another portion of the body, creating a whole different situation somewhere else to take some of the pressure off. So oftentimes we find people who are very ill complain of 2, 3, 4, even 5 different things going on in them. When that's the case, I recommend the Master Blend first and foremost, because what it's going to do in about a 3-week period is it's going to immediately get rid of some of those extraneous complaints.
Plus, it's
going to start pulling it back towards the center and the original and the cause.
Yes, and also the 7 cleansers are contained in the Master Blend.
That's correct. The Master Blend does not have amethyst in it because it is doing a full sweep of body, mind, and spirit and bringing into balance the areas that are extraneous or that were secondary, leaving you with 1 or 2 primary maladies, which then you would switch to the 7 cleansers and the specific stones to treat those remaining maladies. Then we have the shield stone. I love the shield stone.
So do I.
All of these other stones that we've been talking about that treat illness work on toxicity. They work on eradicating toxicity. So when you use them by holding them or wearing them for a 20-minute period, you have to then set them down, let them clear, which they do on their own. But the shield stones are a whole different animal. They're about protection. And the shield stones do things like keep stress levels in check. People who are empaths, someone who is very sensitive to the ills and ails of others around them, there's a stone called onyx, which allows them not to shut down that ability to feel empathy for others, but allows them to control it, to walk down the street and decide whether they're going to be an open or closed channel for that empathetic activity at any given point in time. You've got rose quartz, which works on grief. The shield stones can be held at a constant. They can be worn at a constant. Diamond, for connecting us to the divine consciousness, can be kept on at all times because you're not dealing with levels of toxicity. You're dealing with areas of protection.
Yeah.
And yeah, areas of communication and areas of control.
I must actually tell you that there was a time when I was in a terrible, terrible state and very, very teary, and it was like I'd been crying for about half an hour and just didn't know what to do with myself because I didn't think it was ever going to stop. And I remembered the book. I remembered rose quartz. Held the rose quartz for what could have only been 2 minutes. And I actually tried to force myself to cry just to see what was going on because the tears dried up almost instantly and the feelings of sadness were just dissolved. It was amazing. It was one of the first times when I'd had one of those very direct, immediate experiences with rock medicine. And after that, of course, I just could not believe how lucky I was to have found your book and to now have these wonderful tools as part of my life.
And see, that's why the book has so much information about each stone, because take rose quartz, for example. On the surface, saying to someone, rose quartz is for grief over loss, the first thing that may come to people's mind is losing a loved one. But it could be losing a relationship.
Mm.
It could be a kid whose family is moving to a new neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
They're losing their school, their friends.
Yeah.
A comfort zone that they've become used to. It could be the loss of an item, quite literally. But think about it in other terms. What about someone who really has gotten used to being ill? Someone who doesn't want to lose their illness.
Yeah, because they've formed their identity around their illness.
That's correct. So that's why an interview like this can only give a brief glimpse into the window of what the full system is. Because every stone has such a broad spectrum of definition to it. And it brings me to a point that I do want to share. You know, I've been doing this such a long time, and, you know, we're human here, and we need each other, and we need our tools. And there have been times in my life where I have felt ill or sad or depressed, where I've laid on my couch and known that my crystals are right there in that cabinet, right there. My stones are right there. Get up and get them. Get up and get them. Go use them. Put them in your hand and use them. And it's important that people understand that the key to rock medicine working is the faithful application of it. It's not enough to know it. It's not enough to own them. It's not enough to have them beautifully displayed in a cabinet in your living room.
It's so true.
They have to be utilized.
Yeah.
You have to take the time, which is why I'm so glad we've got more than one method, because to be honest with you, hand-holding the stones four times a day for 20 minutes in our fast-paced lives does not work for most people.
Yeah, well, it's
the
a big
people
ask.
Who, yeah, the people who use that method are the people that are so critically, chronically, and fatally ill that their life revolves around their illness. They sit and wait to do their next application. So utilizing the essence, which is not quite as expeditious, where holding the stones will elicit results in days. Doing the essence will elicit results in a matter of weeks. But if you can't be faithful to holding the stones four times a day, then opt to do the essence. Or you can do a combination.
Yeah.
You can have your combination of stones by your bedside where before you get out of bed, you do a handheld.
Yes.
And then twice through the day, you've got a dropper bottle or a sports bottle of the essence with you.
Mm-hmm.
You do two more applications of that through the day. And then when you lay down at night to go to bed, do your fourth application of the day as the handheld.
Yes.
You can combine them in any way that works for you, but they have to be used. Setting crystals and gems and stones on your windowsill or by your head on your bed stand at night, they don't do anything but look beautiful.
It's a little bit like
must be used.
Yeah, it's a little bit like tipping out that bottle of vitamins and waiting for one of them to sing to you.
Exactly. Bought a gallon of paint, I put it in the middle of my living room. 3 months later, the room was still not painted.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep, they're practical tools, and I thank you very much for mentioning that again and reiterating that point, because it is so important. And from my own experience, I know it is very difficult to make that time four times a day to hold rocks, but mm-hmm. I can definitely do it in the morning when I open my eyes, because they're right next to my bedside, and I can do it just before I go to sleep at night. So combining the two methods is really ideal, I think, if you live a regular life in a fast-paced environment. And what I would like to talk to you now, as we come into the conclusion of our time together, are some of the most common sort of ailments that people would probably turn to rock medicine for. In your experience, what have been the most common things that people have, you know, wanted to use rock medicine for, and in your opinion, the easiest combinations of stones that can be used?
You know, oddly enough, Liz, it's cancer.
Is it really?
And we've been treating so much of it so successfully for so long. we really have to, and I say we, meaning my dear, dear friend and co-author on the book, Elaine Nelson. Elaine's been doing rock medicine for 15 years. She's my longest standing student slash partner in this, knows it works it every bit as well as I do. We have to watch our attitudes, because sometimes people will come to us and say, you know, just with their hearts torn out of them that, you know, my father is dying of cancer, and, you know, we kind of go, oh, easy, we got that one.
Yeah.
We totally have that one. You know, and we do. But it's the point of reference. You know, we've been treating cancer for so long, so incredibly successfully, that it's almost like someone coming to us and saying they have a common cold. And
it's almost
cancer,
getting to be that common, though.
Yes, it is. It really is. I was the next thing out of my mouth is so prevalent.
Mm.
But it is actually one of our easiest things to treat. We've done so much work in it and really have the combinations and the applications down pat for so many different types of cancer. You know, blood sugar is another one. Diabetes, hypoglycemia, we've treated an awful lot of that. Of course, things like eyesight, wearing glasses, cataracts, responses from injury. There are so many stories of people who fall and literally break their neck or break their back, and they're told, you know, you'll never walk again, and they're right back now to completely well, completely normal 30 days after the accident.
That is a great place to just pause for a moment and tell people which stones you would actually apply, because back problems are really one thing that most people have had experience with. And emerald, we mentioned earlier, is for the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you were experiencing some back problems yourself, what would be the combination of stones to get?
Well, the best way to go for back problems is obviously and first and foremost to get a proper diagnosis.
Yes.
You got to know exactly what's going on there.
Yeah.
And then you would start with the seven cleansers,
mm-hmm.
add a amethyst, take the emerald, which says back, and then depending on what it is, if you've got strained muscles, maybe you picked something up wrong, you didn't use your knees, you used your back and you pulled a muscle, you would add halite, which is for muscles and tendons.
And what if it were your spine?
Well, you know, there is, of all the things that we could have used as an example, back problems and the use of an emerald is kind of something that has a little bit different application, in that you can use the emerald as a specific instrument by itself. And you can run it down someone's spine a quarter inch from contact from their body. And whether you've got someone with a minimal temporary injury or someone who's got long-term chronic back problems, you continually do this application of running the emerald from the first vertebrae all the way down to the tailbone, and then lifting it and flipping it like you're almost severing that tie, you know, that little line that you've created there. It works incredibly well. I can tell you a story of my ex who was a physician who had a patient who was shot. She had a bullet lodged in her spine, and she was a paraplegic for 3.5 years. She went to him not because her physical body was going to get better, but because his expertise was psychiatry for her to deal with the fact that it wasn't.
Yeah,
okay. And he went to the hospital twice a day and did this emerald application. And because her injury was so severe, he didn't even have her laying prone to do it. He did it from the front with a piece of clear quartz with a perfect point to kind of accelerate it from the front through to the back. And after the first 2 sessions, she began moving her toes. And over time, regained movement and motion of various portions of her body.
Incredible.
And so talking about the emerald, you know, like I said, it each of these stones has such an individualized application and spectrum of what they do and how they work. And it's not complicated information. There's just a lot of it. My first opportunity I get, I'll come to Australia, I'll hold a two-day workshop, and we can do a lot of these methods in person and you know, doing it in a way that people can actually see, you know, an example of some of the things we're talking about
yes.
here tonight.
So let's talk about your upcoming appearances, because now that you are kind of back out on the road, you're starting to do lectures again. Have you got any lectures upcoming that you'd like to let the people know about?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, my decision to make myself available is exactly 10 days old.
Wow.
So I put the word out to several people that I am, in fact, available for lectures, and we're looking to see what kind of scheduling is going to work.
Okay.
I do hold a regular job, which I always have since I've done my rock medicine work. I'm hoping that there's a way that I can transition that.
What are you doing, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I am the Texas State Canvas Director for an environmental lobbying organization. We don't lobby with money. We lobby with voices. We organize communities around the nation behind critical contaminant issues that affect the health of children and the general public everywhere, whether it's water pollution, air pollution, or soil pollution. And so I spend every day trying to get laws and lawmakers voted in that are going to uphold and maintain strong standards to get some of the corporate polluters to pay to clean up what they've done already and to cease and desist making it any worse.
That's such wonderful work that you're doing, not only with the rock medicine, but with the environment. So that leads me into asking you, is there something that ordinary people can do with crystal technology, with rock medicine, to actually help clean up our environment? Is there anything?
There absolutely is. There's something called a blanket spread.
Okay.
And I think to try and describe it would be more difficult. Do you have the capacity to put photos up on your website,
Liz? Yeah.
Maybe you could build one, because I know you understand how they're built.
Yes.
Maybe you could build one and put the example up. But do you realize that with just 88 pounds of quartz crystal, you can send the influence of a stone a distance that will cover the planet? Doing this kind of blanket spread, it's going to take years to elicit an absolute change,
yes,
like you would see in days in a human being applying it to themselves. But if everybody, you know, we don't need to be redundant. I have always dreamed of putting together a communication network so we know who's putting what up. You know, we need one spread up for diabetes,
yeah,
one spread up for air pollution, one spread up for water pollution, one spread up for radiation toxicity, one spread up for violence, one spread put up with granite in it for gentleness and kindness. And, you know, each of these spreads requires 88 pounds of quartz crystal to cover the globe. But when you think about a blanket spread emitting its stone's influence a distance that is equal to 100 miles per pound of quartz crystal, if all you have is 5 pounds, you're covering 500 miles every direction. You can set it up in a closet in your house where no one will touch it or move it. And you can elicit wellness in any given area. You can choose a malady, choose an area of influence, and from your home, make a difference for a 500-mile radius. That, yes, given 3 years, but you know what? 3 years goes pretty quickly these days.
It really does.
And you can make that kind of difference.
Great.
You know, and that brings me to one thing I'd like to say. There's two methods with rock medicine that enable us to elicit wellness, whether other people know it
accept it, want it, welcome it, or approve of it. And this kind of got me bashed in some early metaphysical circles because people believed that, you know, wellness had to be something that was owned and desired by an individual.
Yeah, and that
I like
permission.
To use the analogy of a heart attack.
Mm.
If you were in a room full of people and someone had a heart attack, you knowing CPR and someone else having a phone, would you both stand there and wait until this person said, I want you to do CPR and I want you to call 911?
No.
It's an emergency.
Yeah.
It's an emergency, and so is every imbalance. And since I am connected to every single person on this planet, my take with rock medicine is, if you won't heal us, I will heal us, because I can.
That is so awesome. Before we conclude, and we're just about to wind up now, I want to quickly ask you about some things that are not prescribed in the book Rock Medicine. And
mm-hmm.
these are things like the use of wands, because you see when you go to crystal shops these days, large collections of different types of crystal wands. Some have a handle that is connected to the crystal, and so you can hold it.
You know, let me tell you, I can answer this really quickly,
okay,
Liz, because nobody is authorized to be using or building wands at this point. Most of the wands that are being put together are being put together based upon color grids that have nothing to do with what the stones actually individually do, first of all. Second of all, a lot of the wands, the way that they're configured, are like going after a mouse with an atom bomb. People should not be building these apparatuses without knowing exactly what the combination of stones is.
Yeah.
And they're very powerful, very focused instruments that we're really not to be using yet.
Yeah. Can we just talk about the points on crystals? You know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
you see very beautiful, perfect points.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, say, holding a crystal and you point it at somebody, is that going to do anything negative to that other person?
If you are holding a quartz crystal in your hand and you are pointing it at another person, if you are wearing any stones, you will be sending the stone in a beam, a laser-like beam, at the person.
Mm.
If you are not wearing any stones, any other stones, then you will be sending whatever's going on within you amplified at that person.
Okay, so it won't cut their aura or anything like a knife?
Nope.
Okay, that's great to know. That's really good to know. And lastly, the use of crystal layouts and grids is something that you don't mention in rock medicine either, but is very commonly practiced. And I'd like to hear your take on all of that.
Well, I tell you, you're getting into an area that I like to call the woo-woo. Because, you know, to be honest with you, I have more reception with my work in clinical medical circles than I do in metaphysical circles.
Oh, very interesting.
And I'll tell you why, because it is scientifically presented. And there are a lot of people who want to attach a lot of kind of flourish to this work. There's no problem if you want to make beautiful little designs with the stones starting from someone's forehead down through their body to their feet, but you're just embellishing a clinical, practical science with a lot of foo-foo, woo-woo, fringe stuff that is not necessary. It's just like people who think they need to be quiet and maybe be in a meditative state or do affirmations when they do rock medicine. You can be driving down the freeway holding the stones in your right hand if you got small enough ones.
You know, it's just like sage. We burn sage as a prayer. Sage should be burned every day. But it's not anything you have to stop and help the prayer along with.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning, you go into your kitchen, and you turn on the coffee maker, you push down the toast, you flip an egg, you light the sage, you wipe the baby's face, you pour the orange juice. That is how these sciences work. They are tools of practicality. There is a place for ceremony in life, but science isn't that place.
Sheila, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for all the time that you've given our audience today.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
How can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'll tell you. I think that the best way would be to link them to the Rock Medicine chat room.
Okay.
I check in with there all the time. And from there, of course, it does give my personal email address, although I have to caution people that there came a point at which I was getting 100 emails a day, and it was impossible to keep up with them and answer them. So I really, really encourage people to join the chat room. That way they can join an ongoing conversation where if I'm not there at that particular time, Elaine might be jumping in. Margaret Schermerhorn, who does a lot of work and has done this work for about 9 years. There's a lot of people with a lot of experience that can answer and help and guide and direct others in rock medicine if I'm not able to get to every single question.
Okay, and people can find that if they go to Yahoo Groups. All they need to do is look for Rock Medicine and sign up for the group, and you'll be part of it. And I'm part of that group and love it, so the more the merrier, I think. There is a poem that you found. It's from the Tang Dynasty scriptures, dated 750 AD. When did you find this?
Wow, let me see. Actually, I didn't find it. It was a gentleman in the Netherlands.
Okay.
I think a few years ago.
Right.
He was the one who found it and sent it on to me.
Well, I think this is the perfect way to conclude our time together, as it's all about rock medicine, and it's actually rock medicine with a capital R and a capital M, and that is the exact phrase as it was translated into this poem. So let me just conclude with the reading of this. This rock medicine is not a cure for the imaginary ailment that keeps the preachers in business. It supports neither hope nor despair, indulges no notions of mistaken identity, seeks no success, and avoids no failure. It's rock medicine. With nothing to recommend it, it is neither a method nor remedy. Because it is freely available to all, it is most common. Since its value is unknown, it is priceless. A treatment of rock medicine accomplishes nothing, incites no transformation, stirs no secret power, confers no exaltation. Thus, it is truly of no use, the ultimate medicine of last resort. It has no grand master, nor initiated practitioners, nor evangelizing proponents, and thus remains obscure to the meaning-making mind of attraction and aversion, affirmation and denial, need and satisfaction. With no image to preserve, it will never become famous, admired, or despised. It belongs to nobody, nor can anything be added to it or subtracted from it. It neither expands with time nor contracts with space. Preceding history, it has no precedent, and thus is ever new. Since it can neither be learned nor forgotten, it is without any quality worthy of praise or complaint. Beyond compare, it cannot be described by simile or metaphor. Unnoticed in the commotion of worldly affairs, it will quietly do its job. Impartial to both the wise and the ignorant, it leaves no trace behind. How did you feel when you first read those words, Sila?
I actually believe I cried.
Yeah.
To have it written in 750 AD and as you say, that is in capitals in the body of the poem, Rock Medicine.
Mm.
And it's so much of everything that I have been trying to explain to people. And in fact, when the book was written, the title of the book originally was I Am Rock Medicine. And it was Blue Dolphin Publishing who thought that that title should be changed. And I argued that point. And so I guess my first reaction when I read the poem was, shouldn't have changed the name of the book. Should have left the I Am in there.
Well, you are Rock Medicine. That's absolutely something that you've demonstrated very clearly today, I think. And thank you again, Sila Randazzo. Much luck and success to you on your journeys. And all I can say is I just hope that the universe keeps supporting you in the wonderful way that it has, so that you can continue to do this work for many, many more years to come.
Thank you so much, and all I ask is that people use it and share it.
Sila Randazzo is the author of Rock Medicine. I do hope that you enjoyed our time together, and please remember that if you'd like to find out more and to find out exactly what the ingredients are in the master blend, then check out the link from the bbsradio.com homepage that says Otherware, or go to otherware.blogspot.com. That's all for this week. Enjoy the new moon, and remember that you can make the most out of this time in the month by focusing your energies on any new projects that you have in mind and get them going. Have a joyful, empowered week, and I'll see you back here next week on bbsradio.com.
Download complete.